My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. We continue with Inside United with our guest, Dr. Steve Britt. Thank you for coming on the program today.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
We want to continue some of the discussions that we've had here about really the awesomeness of God, looking at creation itself. We've gone through talking about the universe, its vastness, but today we're going to take another step. Instead of looking up, we're going to look inside. We're going to look into the molecular world that is equally as fascinating, and discoveries are made there to me that rival those of astronomic. So that's what we'll be talking about today.
Yeah, it's exciting. We'll be able to look at things like DNA and genes and what makes us who we are at this biochemical level.
We're going to go and talk about some of these terms, and before we get fully into them, we really need to have a definition of them. So Steve, tell us about DNA. What is DNA?
Well, Vic, it's deoxyribonucleic acid, obviously.
Oh, that's what I thought it was.
Well, yeah, so it is a molecular structure found in every living organism. Watson and Crick, these scientists back in the 70s and 80s, discovered this material that carries the information that an organism passes on to its offspring. And they found this classic double helix structure. It looks like a twisted ladder at the molecular level. And each one of those rungs is a certain type of chemical bond. And the order of those chemical bonds are what determines the kind of proteins that an organism will make, and ultimately makes us into who we are, or a frog into what it is, or an oak tree into what it is.
Well, at one time, even the astronomic world was looked upon as being quite simple with 5,000 stars or so, and that was it. And then it's found to be much, much bigger. In the same way, the genetic world was looked upon as DNA strands, as being just a coding, of 23 things, and that was it. Now they're finding that there's sub, layers of that, and they're finding it to be far more complex than what earlier was thought.
They found that the human genome, so in our DNA, every one of us, we have something on the order of 6 billion actual base pairs, those rungs on the DNA ladder, and the way those are organized is really, really complex. So it's organized into what we call genes.
Well, before we get to genes, use the word genome. Okay. And maybe explain genome and gene and how it relates to DNA so that we are all kind of knowledgeable of what we'll be talking about.
Yeah, sure. All right. So I already described the DNA ladder, right? And that whole long strand of DNA has about 6 billion of those base pairs, those ladder rungs. Gene is a set of rungs in the DNA ladder that make a single protein in your body. And that can be anywhere from, a few dozen rungs to maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of DNA rungs or base pairs that end up going into one gene to make a protein. It depends on the protein being made.
And how many proteins are there?
So I believe they've identified around 20,000 genes in the human genome. So the genome is your entire collection of genetic information in your DNA.
Okay. Well, maybe I should introduce it now, but stem cells and so forth. And we might be jumping off topic, but these are things that people read in headlines before, and they become controversies and so forth. So perhaps we could have, now that we have DNA understood, genome and gene, stem cells.
Yeah, well, stem cells are even more interesting. So we have our DNA that makes us who we are. Somewhere, scientists haven't really identified where, are also this set of instructions that tell a cell what kind of cell to be. The DNA contains not only all the information about, how long your hair is going to be and what color and your eyes and all that, but it tells cells in development in the womb as an embryo whether to become a skin cell or an eye cell, a photoreceptor in your eyeball, or, a hair follicle or whatever it's going to be. Now, the cells, before they are differentiated, So that's the key word is differentiated are stem cells. So meaning they haven't taken on that functional identity within the body yet. So people get very excited about stem cells in medical research because the idea is that if you have, you know, say stem cells of my own genetic material, then, well, if I need to grow a new kidney, I can grow one based off of my own DNA. I can just have a blob of stem cells and tell them in a certain way, differentiate, turn into a kidney, turn into kidney cells and all the various tissues that make up a kidney. And that's the idea behind stem cells that makes it so exciting.
I suppose the controversy is that somebody who could get in control of this and use it for nefarious purposes.
Well, yeah. Or things that are just plain creepy, like the super meat that they're trying to grow and sell in stores. It's this, you know, meat grown in a lab, and that's kind of even as a consumer product, sounds very creepy. The things that you can do, the potential for people to do, you know, strange and terrible things to mankind is, again, like every other scientific discovery, expands that capacity.
Well, one thing that we wanted to talk about today was how DNA proves God's existence, so to speak.
Right.
I know that for some people who are, you know, atheists or agnostic, you can't prove anything to them because they already have it proved in their head, you know, mm-hmm. a conclusion. However, there have been people that were of this sort of mindset that said, wait a minute, this is awesome. This couldn't have just been randomly created.
What is it exactly about DNA? Is it just that it makes all these interesting things happen? It turns out that there are some abstract concepts at play within DNA as well. And that's the element that even beyond the complexity and diversity and just miracle of life that we see, that points towards a creator as evidence of design.
Tell us about some of these abstractions.
Yeah, right. So mathematically, it's only in the last maybe 80, 90 years, since about the 1930s, when in mathematics we've started talking about information theory and the transmission of information. And that's what DNA does. It transmits information from one organism to its descendants. It's moving, you know, my genetic material and my wife's, combining it into, you know, a new organism of the same kind, if you will, and preserving our genetic information that makes someone who they are. Well, a protein being encoded in DNA, what's stored in DNA is a representation of a protein, not the protein itself. You know, you might imagine one way a cell could work. This isn't how cells work, but you might imagine that a cell would have a copy of every protein it might ever need, and then one protein that can make copies of other proteins, and that's how the whole things work. It just goes to the master set, makes a copy, and then functions as needed. But that's not what happens. What actually happens is this DNA ladder. So I mentioned it has four different types of rungs.
Mm-hmm.
So any protein can be encoded, so that is represented by a sequence of these chemical bonds, these four letters, or nucleotides is the proper name for them. So there are four different nucleotides that any protein can be represented in DNA as. And that's something that within the realm of mathematics, within computer science especially, we've developed systems like that. That's how our computers work.
Right,
we have information storage is one of the foundations of the, you know, technological revolution. So those things were starting to be investigated back in the 30s by one of the primary mathematicians was Claude Shannon, and he developed his whole information theory, and he dealt especially with transmitting information across a channel. So for us, this is like an image, for example. Well, the way we store that digitally is by assigning colors to various pixels, and we turn the lights on, you know, at a very high resolution density so that it tricks your eye into thinking you're seeing an actual image. You know, when you look at a computer image of a building, you're not seeing a building, you're seeing a bunch of lights, right? Little mm-hmm. point dots, and that's an approximation of the actual thing. And it allows our brains to see it and interpret it as a building. So that is itself a type of code, and the way that, you know, detailed information can be coded in a system that has nothing to do with the thing itself. You know, the pixels on a computer screen have nothing to do with the building. The chains in DNA have nothing to do with the actual protein. You know, the thing that makes it work is that you have an interpreting an interpreting thing. So for us, it's our brains and our visual system that can interpret that digital image into knowing, oh, that's an image of a building. Whereas for DNA, you actually have these encoding systems in the what's called the RNA that can take the DNA code and turn it into an actual protein, take the representation of the thing and turn it into the actual thing. Mm-hmm. So I just find it fascinating, and I see that as clear evidence that there was an intelligent designer at play here, because it seems like in human history, as soon as we realize, oh, hey, look, you can encode things, you can represent things abstractly like this to transmit any message you could think of, you can put into binary language on computers, ones mm-hmm. and zeros. Well, God had already done that in DNA. Any protein you can think of, you can encode in these four letters, A, T, C, G, these nucleotides.
Well, this brings up a bigger question to me, of course, to sure. many people, is that could this have just kind of happened? I mean, this to me sounds like there's just a great intelligence. However people want to define it, you know, even people who are afraid to say God, you know,
yeah, right.
would
right.
have to say there's some kind of intelligent design in this, meaning that there's a designer.
Well, yeah, so one thing that makes it evident and what's compelling for me is the fact that we don't see this crop up anywhere else in nature, that, you know, either all of the abstract codes and representations like this are either a product of human design that's deliberate and thought out and we've had to kind of struggle to develop, or it's in the DNA. Those are the only two examples of this kind of abstraction that are really known to exist. Another point of how it doesn't seem like this could just come up randomly over time is a chicken and egg problem, right? If you have this, so how does an encoding system like this arise? How does it get started? Because it does no good to just encode a protein if you don't have a decoder, if you don't have some purpose for it. And it does no good to have the decoding apparatus if you don't have something encoded. So how did it get started? It's really unclear. At the DNA replication level, let alone the level of the survival of an organism as a whole, right? Because a lot more even goes into that, and it gets a lot more complicated and intricate than even just DNA replication. Another fact is that DNA is in fact a universal code, that the way that proteins are represented in the DNA of a human is the same as what you would find in a jellyfish. It's the same as what you'd find in a dandelion. If you have this segment of DNA with this set of instructions, it'll make the same protein no matter what organism it's in. And that, again, if you had an evolutionary process that resulted in this rather than it being designed and created, you would expect to see a lot of different encoding systems, right? You would expect that every organism would optimize its encoding system based on its particular needs. And, you know, there's no reason why a bacteria should be able to make this protein that's only actually found naturally in humans or in dogs or whatever. So I see all those as elements that point towards design, very clearly and deliberately designed systems.
And also, the fact that it could be stored in that way brings up the possibility or the reality of the fact that we could be stored. You know, everything that's about us could be put on our drive somewhere, you know, up there and wherever God is, and then retrieved. And we're getting closer now to the study of God using human beings and then giving us new bodies with the same identity mm-hmm. that we have and bringing all this back. It actually makes it more than just kind of a theoretical, wonderful, fuzzy thought, but something that's even scientific and something that has been coded as far as life itself mm-hmm. in the DNA is something that God himself uses as a process to bring us back from the dust.
Yeah, even just the concept. I mean, this is a very modern concept in human thinking. And in fact, your article you wrote about that in the Beyond Today magazine hints at this, that people are reaching out and trying to do things like this. And it turns out God has a plan to do something very similar.
One thing that was mentioned in the book Immortal by Stanley Bing, at least when he was interviewed, was that they can do so many things in replication. They can do so many things in storage and mm-hmm. being able to digitize the brain and so forth. But he says, one thing we haven't figured out is life in the soul itself. He says, we still don't have that figured out what it is. It was interesting to hear somebody with a certain sense of humility, so to speak, of the fact that we don't have this one cracked, even though they may be trying to find out what the secret of that is.
Right. No one can quite pin down what that spark of life is.
Well, let's continue our discussion. This has been very interesting. We have so much more that we can say about DNA, genomes, RNA. Now that's a new term that was put in here, which I've heard. So thank you for joining us on Inside United. Come back and join us for the second part of this subject.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.